Previously on Willing to Adapt.
All right, today we're talking about The Importance of Being Earnest, a play by Oscar Wilde,
mm-hmm.
and the 2002
correct
film adaptation. The key is that nothing really matters.
Yeah.
The importance of being earnest is above all an exercise in wit. There is nothing to be learned from it. No moral, no message. It adopts what one suspects was Wilde's approach to sex. More fun to talk about than to do.
I'm Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt.
Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. I am Eric Von Crumley.
And I am Romy Reyes.
And if you did not listen to the first half of this episode where we discuss the Oscar Wilde play, The Importance of Being Earnest, please check that one out. It would be very helpful. I mean, you don't have to. You'll understand it enough, but you'll get a lot more out of this episode if you go back and listen to that one first.
Yes, plus the synopsis. This time we're not going to go around it.
Yeah, we're not doing a synopsis. So where the synopsis is basically the same, there's no point.
Well, in a way, the order is very different.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
It is. All right, so just a reminder, today we are talking about the 2002 film adaptation of The Importance of Being Earnest.
Mm-hmm.
It's labeled as a romantic comedy drama, which, sure. It was directed and written by Oliver Parker, and it stars Rupert Everett, Colin Firth, Frances O'Connor, Reese Witherspoon, Judi Dench, Tom Wilkinson, Anna Massey, and Edward Fox. And I don't think most people know the last three. But there you go. It basically takes the plot of The Importance of Being Earnest and rearranges some things.
Mm-hmm.
And adds some things. And omits some things.
Yep.
It's like I'm trying to purposely be vague. Okay. I think for this one, we kind of just need to jump into the differences. I don't really know what else to say about that. Because it's the same basic plot.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about the four-act versus the three-act?
Sure. So one of the things they mentioned this in the volume I read of the original play, that his original draft of Earnest was in four acts. And I guess he gave it to, was it an editor or someone to read? And they basically told him...
Yeah, it was an editor, I think.
Yeah, that it's too long. And so he took it back, rewrote it, cut some stuff out, and he went from having a four-act play to a three-act play. And it kind of makes sense after reading it, because the first two acts, I think, were very... I think the first one was a decent length. The second act was really long. Good, but really long. And then the third act was just a whirlwind of a finish. Now, this part I don't know. Is there a copy of his original?
Well, I feel like there'd have to be.
Because I know there's some of the edited stuff exist, at least in this case. There's the Grimsby episode.
I don't know. But even this film's dialogue is not completely faithful.
Yes.
I was glad that because I watched this movie. I know you just watched this for the first time, literally yesterday.
Yes.
So I'm not going to ask you. But I remember I'd watched this maybe 10 plus years ago.
Okay.
And I remember kind of liking it, but it left kind of a sour taste in my mouth.
Mm.
I remember thinking, it's fine, but it's not the best.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I read the play literally right before watching it this time, because I was very aware of the changes. I was very aware of the omissions and the additions. And I think I like the movie less now.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And I did the same thing, and I thought that was cool, because I could hear... in the dialogue when they would cut little things here and there. And then the four-act play, at the end of this volume of the Signet Classics of the play, they have what's called the Grimsby episode, which was something originally in the four acts that was slashed out and didn't make it into the final version of the stage production. But it did make it into the movie. So, you know, I don't know if you've read any background on the movie, but it sounds like they mined the original four-act version for scenes.
Yeah, I think, I don't know why, like, specifically he decided to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to find what I could on behind the scenes, and I found one video. There's, like, a featurette for the DVD, which was a little helpful, except that I feel like 50% of the featurette was just the actor saying, oh, yeah, we loved working on this. This was fun. You know, Oscar Wilde's great. I think what Oliver Parker's done with the film's amazing. And I'm like, we get it.
So it's an advertisement. Yes. It's an advertisement.
Right? Sorry. I know. Mm-hmm. I was like, I have the DVD. Like, I get it. No, I... Because it's... I think the play in itself, like, if you did it like a direct adaptation, it'd be like maybe an hour, 30 minutes tops. Like, maybe.
You think? Because most stage productions are like 2 hours long.
Well, Words Being Earnest isn't all that long.
No. Yeah, but...
Maybe. I don't know. He definitely felt like he needed to add stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into it. I think we just need to jump in. I think we just need to jump in.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
I'm going to go... I want to say a couple things real quick before we jump in.
Okay.
So the movie was a moderate box office success. It didn't do supremely well, but it did make a little bit of money. And it was it received mixed reviews.
Hmm.
Like, some critics liked it and some critics were not happy. And I'm just going to very, very briefly read a couple things. The New Times. Oh, okay. I guess that's... Sorry. The New Times in L.A. Said that it embraced the material with great gusto, delivering a charming and irresistible film and much more. Just highlighting some things here. The Los Angeles Times at the time said, the result is a film that is at best highly uneven and perversely at odds with itself. Luckily, Wilde's delicious sense of absurdity and peerlessly witty dialogue are pretty indestructible. The Globe, and something else it cut off, said, it amounts to complete misreading of Wilde, who used the conventions of artifice to lampoon artificiality. Parker totally misses the point by tacking on such cinematic curlicues. Skip through. The Variety is my favorite because it had the lowest rating.
Oh, wow.
It said, a comedy in the last century and a drama in the new one. At least that's the dumbfounding impression left by writer-director Oliver Parker's utterly miscalculated film adaptation of Wilde's play.
Wow.
There's something about a really bad review that is just fun to read.
Mm.
Whether or not you agree with it, it's still fun. Did you enjoy it?
So, because it was the first time I'd seen it,
But you watched it after reading it, right?
I did.
It's a little different because I'm very aware of the play. I really like the play. Like, I laugh out loud all the time, like, every scene.
And since I haven't seen it, the production I watched on YouTube was not a great production of it.
Mm-hmm.
So to see a different perspective on how the characters were played was interesting. But after watching that short of the performance, who was the one that we watched before recording?
It was like real professional high end.
It was. And that...
Yeah, there's a version where Lady Bracknell's played by a man, and it is like the funniest thing.
He does like a really good job in the short I saw. But in general, it's like not having a good version of the play to watch.
Yeah, and I think you watched, you said, a high school version?
College version. But
which is almost as bad.
Yeah, it was. Yeah the Algernon in the play was all giggly and... I don't know. It was almost farcical in the way they performed it. So to kind of see a serious version of it, there were a lot of little things they added to it that made sense. But
yeah, I think from an artistic standpoint, I can see kind of where he was trying to come from. He was over the top.
Yeah,
like he really leaned into like the imagination of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like the obvious thing is like in the end, like how like Cecily imagines like herself as like the maiden that needs to be saved by the knight, and she imagines Algernon as the knight. And
I felt like he was just showing visually what he was afraid the audience could not get from a performance by itself.
And I have problems with that because it seems like you're just being condescending. Like you don't trust your audience.
The funny thing is, majority of the audience would never pick it up.
I disagree, but that's fine.
No, I mean,
Just because I'm thinking about her, like, what she talks about, you know, like, I mean, she doesn't go like too in depth.
Most audience members, not including our listeners.
Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't even say that in the original version that she even thinks that way. In the original version, I don't think she views Ernest as like a knight in shining armor or anything. That just seems
so
like something.
So it was an extrapolation. So that it was it was an artistic choice by the director to create those scenes to present a vision of what these characters are like based on his interpretation.
The one that really threw me is when the film opens with Algernon being chased by creditors.
Yes.
People who he owes money to and basically I think are going to beat him. And I just laughed because when I watched it this time, I was like, of course the movie needs to open with a chase.
Yeah, that was different.
The movie infuses so much energy into it, like constant movement. Like they move all the set pieces to different locations and they break it up and characters are all over the place. But later on in the movie, he's running away from the creditors again.
Mm-hmm.
And he like sneaks into his own home through the servants area. And the servants are all randomly playing in a band. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
And it's never discussed.
Nope.
It's like, okay then.
But I want to say, like, I felt, so there was, I know there's movies from kind of that era in American style.
Early 2000s?
No. More along that era of, like, the late, what was it, 1890s?
Yeah, 1895.
And so I got a sense that he was pulling from that kind of era and was really trying to show that era, whether it was through music, whether it was through Gwendolyn driving a car. It was almost like he was trying to infuse a background of where it was taking place by shoehorning all this in.
Yeah, the impression I get from the play is it feels oddly casual.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that in some ways it's very stuffy, you know, with Lady Bracknell and the very Victorian, like, upright etiquette. Like, they hint at things. Like, there's some sexiness that's hinted at.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite parts is when you meet Gwendolyn for the first time with Lady Bracknell, and they're saying that Gwendolyn looks amazing, and she's like, I always look amazing, don't I, Mr. Worthing? And he says, you look perfect. She's like, oh, I wouldn't say that. Like it would stop me from developing any further, and just, and I aim to develop in many directions. But I think they made her way too like aroused in the film version.
The whole tattoo scene.
Okay, let's just jump into this. All right, I'm gonna go through my notes because I wrote these notes as I was watching the movie. I don't know what you did, but I'm going to go in chronological order.
All right.
And we'll discuss it as we go. How about that? The Importance of Being Earnest, the 2002 film, opens with a bang. Algy is chased by creditors, as we said.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's ignored. The director really wanted a larger scale. I know that for a fact because I watched on the behind the scenes.
Okay.
He said that he wanted a larger scale. He said he wanted to get out of like the parlors and the gardens and stuff. And he really wanted to show like a bit more of the society.
Which, I mean, I get that for a movie.
Yeah, and I get that too. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I like to see more of the world in movies because you're able to.
Mm-hmm.
He moves the settings, I said, and he kind of rearranged things. And he also really wanted to put more fun, exciting scenes in.
Okay.
Like when, instead of Algernon talking to Jack in Algernon's morning room or parlor or wherever, it says morning room in the play. They move it so that they run into each other like at like a burlesque theater with can-can dancers and like women like basically just doing anything for the men.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, sure, like it's not like, I mean, you know, Jack does come to town for fun. So I guess hypothetically, like nowhere does it say that he didn't do anything like that. Like that was something they would do. Like that's fine, I guess, you know. Definitely seemed a very like, we did this for the fun of it. But
I mean, I think he kind of tied it in. To the end, Lady Bracknell.
I don't like that.
Okay,
we'll talk about that. Yeah. I don't like that. I get it, but I don't like it. There's a lot of showing instead of telling.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of lines that are in the original play, such as, "Oh, you had my cigarette case. I've been looking all over for it." Whereas at the very beginning, when you see Jack leave for London, like he asks his butler if anyone's found his cigarette case yet. You know, stuff like that, where they kind of change it up so that you're seeing something happening instead of someone just talking about it, which is good for a film.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
This is something they said specifically in the behind the scenes, and anytime I hear someone say this, instantly I think red flag.
Oh, okay.
He said that Oliver Parker said explicitly that he wanted to modernize the story, especially the women.
Okay, I see how that was done.
Yes.
Well, was Cicely not so much?
A little bit, though. A little bit. She, her not as much as Gwendolyn. She is a little bit more spiteful, it seems like. Mm. But, like, only with Gwendolyn there. But then, like, there's this scene where Gwendolyn and Cicely are smoking.
Oh, that's right.
Which women would never have done. Like, no respectable woman would have done at that time period.
That's true.
Yeah, and then there's randomly, like, Gwendolyn getting a tattoo on her backside of Ernest.
That was dumb, but yeah.
It's like, I don't even think she would have known where a tattoo parlor was. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, at least it looked appropriate to the time period, mm-hmm. but, like, that isn't even something that would have been on someone's consciousness. Like, that wouldn't have been something they would have even thought of, necessarily. Like, unless you were a sailor, which you saw coming out of it, but...
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, like, that is a very, very modern thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get that person's name tattooed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just wasn't something they did. So I think he was really trying to reach a modern audience more. Like, a non-theatrical audience.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of over-romanticizes, like, with the knights and, you know, Miss Prism and Dr. Chasuble with, like, the Grecian stuff. And the fact that he's, like, painting her and stuff, which is not in the play.
No.
Like, none of that's in the play at all.
I think he said that last time. He's more of a throwaway character.
A little, like, he's important, if only just because he's needed for the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he didn't really need to be there. I think for Dr. Chasuble, they really expanded his character and the relationship between him and Miss Prism.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because in the end they get married.
Yeah, they do.
Which is not in the play.
No.
At all. That's something.
Yeah, no, but the addition of once again, I think that was just the artistic thing. It was kind of showing, I thought it was more of just emphasizing her youthfulness.
Miss Prism?
No, sorry. The imagination of Cicely. Cicely. And
not Cicely.
Cecily, sorry. And showing
she's not a country in Italy.
Yes. How her youthful imagination was creating this romance in her head. And by...
It just was weird. It seemed so out of place. And
it did. But I kind of felt like I saw what he was trying to do.
No, I know what he was trying to do. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I would not do that. If I was to make the film.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
He tried.
But don't you think it's something that he probably did to try to appeal to modern audience?
I definitely think he was trying to appeal to modern audiences. I just think the way he did it felt very contrived.
Mm.
Like, it didn't seem to really stem from the play.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like he did a lot that he wanted to do, and he kind of just pasted it onto it.
Okay.
To the point that I even noticed there were whole jokes from the original play that he kind of cut.
Mm.
And the humor in his movie is not Wilde's humor. A lot of Wilde's humor kind of fell flat in his film. And he added a lot of, like, kind of weird, quirky, goofy humor. Like, with, like, Jack and Algernon fighting, and then they see the ladies are watching them, so they start hugging each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stuff like that that's not in the play.
No. I think it was... But once again, I think that was more just aiming towards trying to add a sense of
comedy. And then, like, they're wooing the girls with a guitar and the piano.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just seemed like they were leaning into the goofiness.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Lady Bracknell, Judi Dench as Lady Bracknell?
I mean, it's Judi Dench.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she played it fine. I mean,
I think she was the strongest character in the film.
Yeah, no, well, that's Judi Dench, you know,
yeah.
Lady Judi Dench. I mean,
right.
I think she was the only one that fit the character that I created in my head after reading it.
Mm-hmm.
All the others were quite a bit different, with Gwendolyn being the most different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But at the same time, what I like about Lady Bracknell in the stage production is she ironically comes off as ignorant, which is part of the joke.
Yes.
Whereas in this one, she doesn't come off that way.
No, because she's too commanding.
Yes, way too commanding.
Yeah.
And so stern the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like you get a lot more of a range in the play, it seems like to me.
Okay.
Like, it seems like you get a bit of, and obviously some of that is in how the director chooses to portray it and in how what the actor brings to the character. And I just don't think it helped that the film was so goofy that they really needed Judi Dench to balance them out.
Yeah, I mean, because she was in many ways, the...
Like the voice of reason.
She was that and also the most conniving.
Well, I would say Algernon's the most conniving.
Not in the movie, too?
Yeah. He's worse in the movie. Like, he's actually, like, stealing his handkerchief with his initials on it so that he can pretend to be earnest. And
I see what you're trying to say, what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. But I think, like, the whole point of the character from the play is really to make fun of the era, the aristocracy, the upper class of the era.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas because that critique doesn't exist and appeal to a modern contemporary audience, he adjusts it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's fun about the original play is, like I said, it feels very homey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a lot of the action's in one place, and like, it's never really taken, it's taken very seriously, and yet like, it's not, it shouldn't be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And that's part of why it's funny.
Yeah.
And it seems like the film took everything very seriously.
Mm.
Like, too seriously. And like, just even like with the creditors and just like, it seemed like it raised the stakes a lot in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I argue contriving to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, Algernon's creditors, to be fair, like that was in like the first edition of the play.
The four act one.
But we don't really know exactly how much was in there.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks it was just like that one scene where the creditors come to Ernest's estate and then like the whole like, I'm going to take Algernon away, but then, you know, they pay him off and then Algernon has to leave.
Yeah.
Which is in the film. I think that was the only thing that would have been in the play originally.
Probably, because the other one was the other one seemed more made up.
Yeah. But then, you know, like, you know, Gwendolyn getting the tattoo, and it's like, your name's not Ernest, and it's like, well, it needs to be Ernest now, you know. And I don't know, the movie really leaned into the sexiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, someone pour some water on her. Yeah, I think, to be fair, I think the film did a really good job of breaking up the action of the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would say maybe 80% of the dialogue is intact.
Okay.
And then the rest is either taken out or they've added new dialogue. Okay. But I think that dialogue, even though it's intact, is in different order.
Yo, very much different order.
Yes.
Yeah, beginning of Act 2 and Act 1 are all interposed.
Yes. Yeah, and you'll, like, spread out time.
Yes.
A lot more. Whereas I think in the play, it's only, like, 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the film, it feels like weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, for that matter, it really felt like Jack and Algernon had much more of a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it didn't seem like they actually had much of a friendship in the play.
No. Yeah, it didn't. But I think they were really just trying to play up the ending for the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Algernon was at Jack's house for a lot longer in the film than in the play. Because in the play, like, he's barely there, like, maybe half a day.
Yeah.
And in the film, he's there at least a day or two, like maybe more.
Yeah.
So I just wrote, the film is nowhere near as funny. Do you agree or disagree?
It added more slapstick comedy.
It definitely had a different humor.
Yes.
It was a very different
humor. It was funny for different reasons. Yeah. Now, I will say,
it wasn't as intellectual.
No, no. But once again, I go back to my earlier statement in regards to, the people who make movies and shows today are making them for the general population. And because of that, they modify them in a way that will appeal to the general population.
Sure.
And so I like the movie to the point in which even though it may have dumbed down or over, not dumbed down. It's around, I don't think it's the wrong way of putting it, but it may have.
Oh, you can say that. That's fine.
Okay. So it dumbed things down for a general audience, but not to a point where it was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've talked about this before in the past, how I'm not a big fan of contemporary comedy movies.
Mm-hmm.
Movies that everyone loves. I tolerate, or they're okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I appreciated that there was enough of at least the first. Okay. I appreciate one, that this is a classic work, which they're attempting to do something to bring to a contemporary audience.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. Two, there was enough of the original work so that it's not based off of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And even the slapstick was very reminiscent of movies, I think, from that kind of the early 2000s. And I can't explain what movies they reminded me of, but I felt like the comedy, especially with Colin Firth and
mm-hmm.
and Reese Witherspoon, it reminded me like he's watched a lot of movies from the maybe 70s to the 2000s. And there was a lot of, I hate using this word, but vibes from a lot of past movies that I've seen.
Yeah, it almost seemed like there were even moments where it felt like it could have been a Mel Brooks movie if it really wanted to.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
Like if it had much more irreverent. Jokes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, much more irreverent, yes.
But no, I get that. And I felt like almost that the director who made this is very well versed in the comedies of the last, what, four decades. And so for that reason, because it wasn't a contemporary or even a 2000, you know, it wasn't a stupid mm-hmm. comedy. I was able to enjoy it for what it was. Yeah.
Do you remember when we talked about the Pride and Prejudice 2005 film
mm-hmm.
and how they literally modeled a lot of what they were trying to do after 80s movies?
Vaguely, yeah.
And we were talking like a lot of the choices they made were stemmed from 80s movies because they're trying to reach a modern audience.
I vaguely remember our conversation, yeah.
Yes. That's what I was reminded of when I was watching this film. It felt like they were looking at certain films that were very modern, and they said, we need to infuse those into this.
Yeah, that's almost exactly how I felt, too.
Yes.
It was that idea of drawing from what people are familiar with.
I get it. I just, you know, I don't even think I'm a purist all the time,
mm-hmm.
but this is one of the few times that I would have been happy if he had expanded the world like he did.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been happy if he had added a few jokes here and there, or mm-hmm. if he was a little over the top with, like, the imagination. But I just really feel like he really took away from the wit and what made and a lot of the heart of the play.
Yeah.
And he just kind of made his own thing.
I really need to see a good production or listen to it.
I think especially once he gets to the second act of mm-hmm. the film, which is like where they're all in the country,
mm-hmm.
I think that's when the movie goes crazy.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I think up until then, it's actually like moderately accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Like he makes changes, obviously. Like, and there's some that I'm like, okay. But once they get to the country, I'm like, what am I watching? Yeah. What is this?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it is entertaining. I will say it is entertaining. Mm-hmm. I think because I just enjoyed the play so much, it was hard to watch, though.
Mm, okay.
And I think as you go through my notes, you'll see why.
Okay.
So, in the movie, Lady Bracknell is like, somehow, it looks like she's like in the business of marriage. In the play, it's super casual. It's like, okay, well, before you even have any inkling of a chance with my daughter, I'm going to ask you some questions first.
Mm-hmm.
And the film is like, you're going to meet me tomorrow, and we're going to figure this out. Yeah. And there's like a slew of men there trying to marry Gwendolyn, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got ladies there with her, and like they literally filmed that at Buckingham Palace.
Oh, is that... you know what? One of the rooms where he was doing, the room where he did the interview actually looked really familiar. Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole staircase and everything? That's all Buckingham Palace.
Okay, I know, I'm pretty sure I've seen that in other...
And like the way they situated her, they made her look like a queen.
Yeah.
Like literally, like, they leaned into that one real hard.
That's funny. That makes more sense now.
Yeah, it's like they weren't even being subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just kind of funny, I thought. It was a little weird. I wrote, is she the queen? So the film represents Algernon and Jack's relationship very much closer, And then, like I said, Algernon and Cecily have much more of a relationship than in the play. Like, they barely know each other in the play. And I said, it's like the director / writer, he wanted to make the film much more exciting.
And that was something that just popped into mind, is I wonder how much of this is because it's an American audience.
I don't know, because it even felt like I was watching, like, Monty Python.
So I think my thought is maybe that's why he exaggerated it, was for an American audience, to help them understand what he felt.
But why I'm saying it felt like I was watching Monty Python, though, which is very British.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, the random cutaways and stuff, you know?
I mean, like, the fact that he filmed at Buckingham Palace and he made her very...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like, I mean, that type of stuff.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the British audience for sure would know, but...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Because, wait, I don't know. That's a good question. But, you know, like, in regards to, like, making the film more exciting...
Yeah.
He randomly has Algernon go to the country in a hot air balloon.
I know, that threw me off.
Like, okay, why...
Yeah, that was another part where...
That's what I was saying. It felt like he just, like, pigeonholed certain things.
That was another one that I felt was pulled from previous comic films.
Yeah.
You know, especially period pieces where they're in the 18...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he had Gwendolyn driving a car out there.
That was the longest drive I've ever had to sit and watch.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, part of me is like, there's no reason why a woman couldn't have driven a car back then, but also a woman of her status probably never would have driven a car.
Yeah.
I was like, also, like, whose car was it? Because you know it wasn't her car. Because her mother would never let her have a car.
She stole it.
Yeah.
She stole it from the tattoo artist.
Right? I know. You know, this is when, like, the realist in me is like, wait, this is breaking down.
Yeah.
And I already said that the film adds to Dr. Chasuble and Miss Prism's relationship and that they actually really have one. It's not just, like, a flirtation.
Yep.
I thought it was so awkward that he was painting her without her
knowing.
That was
kind of creepy.
It was very creepy. I was, like, waiting for, like, the really awkward, like, naked picture where she comes across it. It's just like, oh.
But the actor they chose for it, I mean, I think he's done stuff where he's kind of played.
He has done stuff like that before. Yeah. So I was like, oh, gosh.
I was like, oh, it's the future ambassador to Hong Kong.
What? What is this?
Rush Hour.
Oh, I have not seen that in so long. One of the things I noticed, because I think watching the film in a way gave me a greater appreciation for the play.
Okay.
And I think he really made the film for a different audience, and I can clearly see that. And I will make the argument that he made the film for a more uneducated audience.
I think I already made that argument.
You probably did. I'm just saying it now. I agree with you. Sometimes you say things I'm looking at my notes. Anyway, the characters...
Not you, our listeners, just to be clear.
The characters, except for Lady Bracknell in the film, were way too passionate.
Say that one more time.
Besides Lady Bracknell in the film, the characters were way too passionate.
Okay.
The humor of the play stems from the self-control of the characters.
Okay.
And that was very much missing in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once again, I'm going to have to watch... I have to listen to a production of that, because not having a good production...
Maybe we'll watch some clips after this.
Okay.
I swear, if you watch a good production of anything, really, but of this one for sure, that was me ripping up my notes.
Yeah, no, it's... I'm trying to... I mean, in reading it... Of course, any emotion that's shown is whatever I put into it myself. And also considering it is a Victorian British production, there wouldn't have been as much emotion in it.
No, that's not true.
No?
No. The Victorian period, like theater.
Oh, melodramatic.
Yes.
You're right.
Melodrama was huge.
That was another criticism of Shaw, was that... So, no, that, sorry. So I retract what I say, and I instead... that was the criticism Shaw had, was that his previous pieces had the appropriate amount of melodrama, and this one did not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Yeah, the importance of being earnest is praised as being one of the prime examples of the well-made play.
Okay.
And, like, the perfect act structure, the payoffs of the jokes and stuff. Like, one of my favorite payoffs in this is when they're talking about women in near the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, when women refer to each other as sister, mm-hmm. he says, yes, after they refer to each other by many other things.
Yes.
And then when there's the scene with Gwendolyn and Cecily, when they're getting like really catty with each other mm-hmm. and like going and like calling each other names and things.
Yeah.
And then once they find out the truth about Algernon and Jack, they go to each other and say, you call me sister.
Yes. I caught that.
You know, it pays off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a lot of jokes like that where, you know, when you're paying attention, you're like, there it is. Mm-hmm. There it is.
The one thing I saw that. And so I can see what you're saying now in regards to the melodrama that he added into it in the theatrical version.
So as the film starts to wrap up, I was really aware of how much of the original jokes that, and like one-liners mm-hmm. that Oscar Wilde had written
mm-hmm.
for the play, they were sacrificed in the film for a lot of new humor that he was infusing.
Mm.
And I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of those are just so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind you keeping the really clever jokes and adding whatever you need to.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't like that. Like, there were even lines, like, the one off the top of my head I can think of is when Cecily is writing in her diary and she's trying to transcribe what Algernon is telling her.
Yeah.
When he's, like, speaking sweet nothings to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he coughs. And she tells him, like, don't cough. Like she just kind of reprimands him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In the play, she says, besides, I don't know how to write a cough.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
But they omitted that line for the film.
Mm-hmm.
Which, why?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
there's a lot of one-liners like that that they dropped
mm-hmm.
for the film.
Yeah.
And so the film, it was weird because I want to say that the play took itself way too seriously, and yet, which is why it's funny, but then at the same time, it is over the top and mm-hmm. does not take itself seriously.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very weird dichotomous relationship that it has with itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would say, in a very bizarre way, the film has that same relationship, but flipped on its head.
Okay.
And so, for me, it just didn't work as well, because it too does not take itself seriously, but mm-hmm. I think in the wrong way. And yet it still takes itself way too seriously in that it cut a lot of the lines that would have added more humor.
Mm, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. The film, you already mentioned, decided it needed to give Lady Bracknell a backstory showing her as a dancer who used her pregnancy by Lord Bracknell to position herself as his wife and into the aristocratic society.
Mm-hmm.
When this literally never would have happened in the time period.
Yeah.
Like, there was no way that could have happened at all.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone would have known exactly who she was, and she would never have had her position.
Yeah.
It was pure joke. That was it. It was just meant for the joke.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. We already said Dr. Chasuble and Miss Prism Mary in the end, which mm-hmm. is not in the book, in the play. This is interesting. I'm willing to forgive this.
Okay.
I actually kind of like this decision. I do and I don't, but I'm okay with it. I want your opinion. In the film, in the end, it shows Lady Bracknell looking in the book.
I was wondering if you're going to bring that up.
Yep, I was. Mm-hmm. And Jack's name is not Ernest in mm-hmm. the end of the film. He pretends it is Ernest. And Lady Bracknell just warms up and goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then laughs. But it was like, okay, just totally changing your character.
Yeah, I know, here. That did throw me off at the end. I was like, probably why I was saying she seemed to be in my mind, she seemed more conniving than Algernon. Algernon was conniving through the whole thing, but it was more of a selfish to get his way.
Mm.
Whereas with her, there was a hint of the seriousness and trying to make sure everything is properly done. And,
well, and I think in a way that she's like that in the play, too. So.
She is, but she has more of a bumblingness to her in the play.
Yeah, she does. She does, for sure.
Whereas
it's comical in that she does not make sense.
Yes. Those are what makes her character funny. Yeah.
Whereas in the movie, she actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And I kind of felt it was more of the showing of her past and to tie in the lack of earnestness going on. With all the characters, led to her laugh at the end, is how I saw it. Now, I'm not saying...
The way I saw it is, like, they just wanted a happy ending.
Yeah, it was. Because, I mean, then you also have the funeral at the end.
Yes, I was going to talk about that.
And so, but I felt like it was his way of having the serious anchor for the whole movie, show her scene, and then have her break character and show that she's no different than the rest at the end. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
For better or worse.
Yeah. And then you said it's in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new scenes.
Yes.
Where they're very somberly walking to the cemetery where they're having a funeral for Bunbury.
Yes.
And Algernon looked very upset. And then Jack gets Gwendolyn's name tattooed on his ass.
Was that in there too?
Yep.
Maybe I didn't watch all
the
way to
the very,
end.
That's the very, very last thing before it turns into real credits.
Oh, and you know what?
It was right after the funeral scene.
I think I stopped it after the funeral
scene. It shows Jack at the tattoo parlor, literally the same parlor, same China man, and Gwendolyn's there, like, supporting him, and then he's, like, wincing because it shows that he's getting Gwendolyn.
That's kind of funny.
I was like, okay.
I know.
I will, we can keep talking if you want. The last note I have, and I've already kind of said it, but I'm just going to finalize it,
sure.
Is the play takes itself too seriously, which makes it funny. The film does not take itself seriously, and most of the jokes that do remain from the original do not land.
Yeah.
To be fair, the first time I watched this, I think I was maybe a teenager or right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was the right age for that, for this film.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say, I don't like the film.
Mm-hmm.
But if it gets people interested in Oscar Wilde, then fine.
A gateway.
Yes, if it's a gateway drug to Oscar Wilde, then that's fine.
I think a lot of adaptations hopefully do that.
Hopefully. It's like when a movie comes out, all of a sudden people are like, oh, I should read that book. And it's like, you had many opportunities to read that book. You just chose to now.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to argue with you because I'm glad you're reading.
Yeah. I think because since I didn't have the same background with the play as you did, I didn't dislike it as much as you did.
Yeah, I think I'm also just in a very different stage of life now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having just read the play.
Now that you're an elderly curmudgeon. Yeah.
There was just a lot of elements they added that, because I understand that time period now a lot more too, and I can understand a lot of the satire that he was infusing into the play.
Yeah.
That is just gone in the film, and the film was just really just like entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that's what it came down to.
It really did.
Mm-hmm.
It did. And I think that was the impression that I even got from the actors, is like they just seemed to just be having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
Because I even read somewhere that there was certain of the slapstick humor that was there that was not in the script. They ad-libbed.
Oh, yeah. There's a part where, like, Algernon, like, slaps Jack on his backside, and then there's a part where he, like, kisses him.
That was
on the cheek,
I read that,
and,
too.
Like, that was all ad-libbed, and they just kept it because the director thought that Colin Firth's reaction was way too good to not keep. It's funny because I think in real life, Rupert Everett's actually gay.
Oh, really?
I think so. I hope so now that I'm saying it. But I'm pretty sure he is. Which is what makes me think, like, if that was ad-libbed, if that was just, like, him, you know? Just being him.
Well, there is a way to find out.
Google.
Rupert Everett.
Yeah, I always think of the scene in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt when they said, I Googled you and I didn't find anything. She's like, you did? I didn't feel anything.
Bisexual, I believe.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because he had a wife at one point, and now he has a partner.
In crime?
Not in crime, no.
All right, so you enjoyed the movie then?
I did, yes.
That's
but
fine.
Like I said, I still need to watch a good production of it.
So who's your favorite character in the film?
That's a hard one. I don't know if any of them endeared themselves enough to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to choose a favorite character...
You just, like, randomly pick, like, Lane the butler.
Yeah, I know. But even the butler in the play was funnier.
I thought so, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, honestly, it'd have to be one of the two main characters. Because I'm trying to think of the other side characters, and none of them were really endearing enough. I mean, I liked her performance, Dame Judi Dench, but I don't know if I really liked her character in the movie.
I didn't like her interpretation of it,
mm-hmm.
but to answer my own question, I think she's in the film, she's my favorite character.
Mm.
Just because she's the most compelling.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to go base it off of that, mm-hmm. then yeah, mine would also be hers.
Yeah. She's my favorite in the play, for sure.
Mm.
But Lady Bracknell's hilarious.
Yeah, you know, actually, now that you mentioned it, if I have to go back to the... If I look through all the characters in my head in the play, because of the way he writes her character in her lines, I would agree with you. She's my favorite in the play as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. But same character, but for completely, vastly different reasons.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Did you ever watch Shakespeare in Love?
No.
I mean, it's fine. It's very fictional. It's not accurate.
Yeah.
But Judi Dench played Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
And when you watch this, you're like, yeah, it's kind of like you're playing Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
Like, very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll ever watch it, but if I do.
You watch it with your wife.
Yes.
Just be aware there's some very very graphic sex scenes.
Doesn't surprise me, no. But
yeah. It was honestly, those like late 90s movies that like really got away with a lot.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I usually don't watch a lot of a romance
It's stuff. Only fun because it's fiction, but mm-hmm. it's like a, it's almost like a weird behind the scenes of like how they made Romeo and Juliet.
Mm.
It's not accurate, but it's fun.
Yeah.
But the costumes are gorgeous and you know, like,
okay.
Yeah.
Maybe one day we'll see.
I think it won some awards.
I think so. I think I knew it wasn't accurate. I know that I knew that much, mm-hmm. but I think I do remember hearing it about it winning awards, but,
mm-hmm. but it's cool. So then if you had to give the movie a rating, 0 is I wish that I could unsee this. 10 being I want to watch this every day.
Thankfully in my life, I've only watched maybe 2 0s. But mm-hmm. let's see, for this one, you know what? I'm just going to, I would give it a 5.
I was going to give it a 5.
Yeah?
Yeah. I thought you were going to give it higher than that.
No.
Because mine's probably my lowest score I've given anything so far.
I can't remember if it's mine. I don't remember my past scores.
You were close to a 5 once.
Really?
I think I've raised you in the arguments a couple of times for some episodes where you're like, oh.
I know you have. There's been some times when you, the more you outline things, the more I realize, huh, that's a very good nuanced view of it. So no, definitely this one a 5. It's one of those that I think if it's on in the background,
like I'm not,
I'll probably leave it on.
I'm not mad that I watched it. Like, I don't think I'd watch it again,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the worst thing out there.
No, agreed.
It's not my cup of tea, but it's, yeah.
So what about the play?
Oh, I love the play. I love the play. We don't usually rate the original source material, though.
No.
We can, if you want.
I'm just curious for this one, because you do love it so much compared to the, I'm curious to your rating compared to the original.
I give it a 9.
A 9? Okay.
Yeah, I give it a 9. I think what helps is it literally is just not meant to be taken seriously. So you can forgive so much about it.
Mm.
Yeah, I think if it took itself seriously at all,
yeah,
then the rating might go down. Because okay. then it's like, well, Algernon and Cecily don't know each other very well at all. Like, they mm-hmm. barely met each other. And, like, all these relationships are based on deception and, like, mm-hmm. all that. But because it literally does not take itself seriously and it satirizes the time period mm-hmm. and it's so witty,
yeah,
you can forgive so much.
Yeah.
And I think that's what helps.
I haven't seen a good enough production to give it a rating.
I'm going
to
show you some things after this.
Okay.
So now we're moving on to what type of adaptation is this? For all you folks out there listening, if you have not listened to the trailer for our podcast, where we do go in depth on the types of adaptations that I've come up for this, we do talk about that. So please give it a listen. Where there is, I think, 4 types.
Mm-hmm.
I should remember, I came up with them. The first one is true to source material. The second is expanded. The third is artistic. And the last one is message driven. So, what do you think this adaptation is?
Artistic.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Very artistic.
Blatantly.
Yeah. Like, he definitely makes changes and he adds and emphasizes and the imagination and all that. I knew right away it was going to be that. This was not even a question for me.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Part of me was thinking maybe it could be message driven very briefly, but then mm-hmm. I was like, nah, this is, because it's not necessarily, yeah. Just going to leave it there. Great. Anything else you want to add before we finish?
No, this one was a very straightforward.
This was Yeah, it was good. I'm glad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Me too. I'm once again.
It makes me want to read more of his stuff.
Well, I mean, we. Well, we have a podcast where we can talk about this stuff.
Well, I think the only one I think we would do is maybe The Picture of Dorian Gray.
Because I don't know if the other two have been, the other stuff have been made.
They probably have, but like nothing worth mentioning probably.
Yeah. What movie has The Picture of Dorian Gray?
It has Ben Barnes in it. Actually, there's a couple versions. There's some older versions.
Okay.
But there's one with Ben Barnes in it that is worth talking about because they make some major changes.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, I've been to our list.
Do you know who that is?
Say it one more time.
Ben Barnes.
We saw something with him in it.
He played Prince Caspian.
Prince Caspian. Oh.
In the Chronicles of Narnia.
I know who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was that recent.
Well, I mean, recent in that it probably came out in like 2008 or 2010.
To me, anything after 1996 is recent.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. I hope you all got something out of this. If you disagree with anything that we've talked about, please send us an email.
Yes.
If you agree with us, that's fun too. I think it's always more fun to hear about the disagreements.
It is. Or if you have anything to add.
Suggestions.
Or corrections that we made. But yeah, no, hopefully the more you listen, if you listen to us, this encourages you to go to the original sources, watch them, read them, view them for yourselves. And we'd also love to hear your opinion regarding.
Go support your local theater. It.
Yes. Or Library too, or
that too.
Amazon if you buy it from there, or Barnes & Noble, wherever. So, yes. I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yes, and thank you, Remy.
We'll see you next time.
All right, y'all take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt. Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.